Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
I'm Ellen Thorne.
And who are you, special guest?
Jambi McGraw.
Hello, Jambi. How's it going, mate?
Awesome. So awesome to see you.
And you. Thanks for coming to my house.
That's okay. It's lovely. I love it. It's very cosy. Love the fire.
Here we are. Now, Jambi is one of our most favourite humans in the whole world.
Aww.
Yeah, I mean, you are like, you're a comedian, you're a mother, you're an author, you're a midwife.
Midwife teacher. Antenatal teacher, educator.
Yeah.
You're like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of midwives.
That's me.
Can we say that?
Yeah, that's me.
You help those nervous first-time mothers get through, well, you know, the birth and shit. So
I like to say I do. I am a jack of all trades, as you all know.
Because we met you many years ago on the comedy scene, because you run the Heavenly Comedy Night.
I did. Yeah, the new material night, which is very exhilarating.
Yes, that's one word for it.
Can we paint a scene with our words, Ellie? I mean, it's a vivid memory in our comedy history.
Yeah.
So Ellie and I started off comedy in 2013, and one of our first gigs, and I don't think we were even established as a double act. We went along to your open mic night.
Yes.
And it was a beautiful scene. It was a basement of a pub in Shepherd's Bush.
That's correct.
Nothing wrong with that. Do you think standard comedy setup?
Yeah.
In front of other open mic comedians.
Yes.
And it's a room full of hope.
Hope and disaster, I would say. And my favourite thing about the room was that it was like a walkway as well to the toilet. There was like a shortcut to the toilet in front of the audience and between the audience and the stage.
Yeah.
But we weren't allowed, like, if you were up there doing your comedy and someone walked in to go to the toilet, you weren't allowed to comment on that fact because they got really arsy, is that right?
Because every time somebody was going to the toilet, one of the comedians would pick on them and say, "Ooh, what are you going to do? Ooh." And then they complained to the management. And the management said, "These people just want to go to the toilet in peace. They don't want a commentary from the comedians." And so I put it down in my rules that let people go to the toilet to do their business without making a commentary about these people.
That is what I loved about your gig. You do like your opening spiel and she's like, "Okay, now everyone enjoy, have fun, support the comedians. But by the way, someone's just going to walk through."
In between jokes, don't worry, just ignore them. They're just going for a piss. You know?
Oh my God. Awesome. But it was such a good night because you're the MC and you always created, like you say, this really hopeful, fun atmosphere. You're hilarious, obviously, so that helps.
Yeah.
But it was really great and it was always a great night. Like even the night memorably where I think Helen and I and our friend Tommy Barnes went.
Oh yeah.
And one of the other comedians brought a friend of theirs who had Tourette's. So it was like being heckled by someone who couldn't help but heckle you.
And it keeps you on your toes because if you got people sort of, you know, shouting all sorts of things and others walking through to the toilets, then it keeps you on your toes.
As I recall, they kept shouting petrol bombs, which, you know, again, quite unsettling for the audience and the comedians.
Even in a basement.
Yeah, but again, you kind of have to ignore it because, you know, it's obviously not their fault and it's not funny. It's a serious issue for that person.
Right.
So you just kind of have to carry on.
And sometimes it just landed the same time as the joke. And
Oh my god.
So thank you. I feel like basically that comedy night and the comedy night is like it that we went. It was basically like, you know, when that program where people train to be in the SAS.
If you can survive that one.
Was the bit where we were in the mud underneath the barbed wire, going, "Come on!"
With you shouting at us, "Don't mention the toilet thing.
Look away, Ellie. Just let him go to the toilet.
It's completely fine."
So thank you, Jeremy, for that. Thank you. And you're still doing the Heavenly Comedy Night. Where is it? But it's a different venue now, which I think is a shame, personally. But all right, fair enough.
Yes. So they, I think the complaints from people going to the toilet felt a little bit...
It ruined it.
It ruined it for them. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm in a very, very nice venue. It's called the Princess Victoria. Mm. It's a beautiful room. It's got chandeliers and it's got lovely wallpaper. But the wallpaper is amazing, but it's got slaves in it. It's like, oh God.
Slaves.
It's like, wow. Great. I
know. Your colonial material must fit right in there. That's great.
I was like, who puts wallpaper with slaves?
White people, Jambi. That's who. I'd be willing to bet you £1 million it was white people.
So when I went to see the room and they said, yeah, of course you can have the room. I was like, oh, and this is a constant reminder of who I'm supposed to be.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. Never thought of updating the wallpaper.
Just get down Laura Ashley, lads. Come on.
They're not offended by it.
Yeah, that's right.
But they've got lovely chandeliers. If you can keep your gaze up, then it's lovely.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
Yeah. Wow. And to be fair, they're very, very nice. It's got lovely food and they're very kind and they've offered, you know, and it's, you know, I don't know that they're in charge of the wallpaper, but it's beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I'd like to apologise on behalf of white people. I mean, one can't apologise enough when one looks at the whole of history. But
we're looking to you, Ellie.
At least, yes. I'm sure it'll make you feel much better about everything that's gone on, but sorry about the wallpaper. Just sorry. That's probably enough. Just sorry about that.
That's okay. It's absolutely fine. You know, taking it in good humour, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is your sense of humour what gets you through, like, the shit, though? Is that, have you always had a good sense of humour?
Yeah. I've always, like, loved messing around and, you know, like my friends at school, I just love messing around. I didn't want to be like serious. You know, some people are so serious and it's like, so those guys. And I don't know if you guys know this. I used to work in IT.
Right.
And I
believe you studied at New York State University.
I did.
Look at the research I've done, listener. Gosh.
Yes, I did. And I worked in IT and those guys don't know how to have fun.
What are you talking about? IT people have an amazing reputation for being like really funny.
I know. They were so much fun that I decided that I should go to childbirth, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
More lols there.
More laughter there. So So I've always loved messing around. I loved joking. And interestingly, when I was growing up in Kenya, somebody brought with them a cassette from it was Richard Pryor, and so we were listening to Richard Pryor and was like, we didn't get the jokes because we were, you know, their English that they speak is very difficult. It was very difficult for us to understand. We're like, what's he talking about? So we knew it was meant to be funny, but we didn't actually know what he was talking about because we couldn't understand the accent. Yeah. Yeah, so, but I was always aware of Richard Pryor. I was Eddie Murphy because also they used to sit around one of those ghetto blasters and listen to Eddie Murphy.
Right, yeah.
Again, the same. It's like, and a lot of the references, you don't actually get those references.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of, at the back of my mind, you know, comedy was always around me. So I was always aware of comedy, but I never saw myself as a comedian. And if I hadn't worked in childbirth, so as an educator, I would never have had the confidence, I don't think, to stand in front of people and do comedy.
So that was your SAS thing, was just standing up in front of people telling how to pull a baby out of a fanny, basically.
Yeah. Literally.
That's not, I like that, like, yeah.
That actually turns you to comedy, spending all that time talking to, and do you talk to mums and partners?
Yes. So basically it's a full-on antenatal class that I do.
Yeah.
So what I did was I set up a project at a big teaching hospital in central London, And they wanted to know, like, these are factors that influence whether people have a cesarean section or whatever. And so we had a theory that it is information that can influence, obviously can influence a lot. So we thought that we would set up a project, but then they said access to information for many people, especially if you have to pay for classes, then that was a barrier because it's a very expensive time. So we set up this project and we just provided free classes for people. And I noticed when it said free, the people coming to the classes, like their partners would just sit there on the BlackBerries or whatever. And I thought, not in my class. So I thought, when they come in, I'm going to tell them a couple of jokes, wake them up, because the classes started at 8:30 in the morning.
Mm. On the weekend.
On the weekend.
Yeah.
And most of them had a hangover and everything.
No man wants to see a picture of Fanny at that time, unless it's on a very specialist website.
But they came in and, you know, started with a couple of jokes, and then, you know, it became so much fun. They were like, oh, that was different. And so one of them suggested that I should do stand-up comedy.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's how I got into it. I went home and I told my husband, this man thinks I should do stand-up comedy. And he said, yeah, do it.
Oh, great.
You know, that's the kind of man my husband is. Yeah,
good
do
old
it.
Mr.
Yeah.
McGrath.
I know.
So, he's not going to the old meetings down the old patriarchy, is he?
No, he's not.
Good lad.
No, he's handed in his membership.
Yeah. He's cancelled it, yeah. I just love the idea of you standing up in these antenatal classes going, so yes, and then when you're 9 centimetres dilated, ignore this man going to the toilet, he's just nobody say anything.
That's amazing. Carry on, just push, not loop.
Oh, awesome. So then you just went and bloody did it, Jamie. You're like, yeah, comedy, yeah. I can do that, fuck it.
Yeah.
Did you say it in that voice?
Exactly like that. I said, yeah, I can do it, and then... the promoter of the club, he said to me, bring me tomorrow, I'll give you a spot. So I rang him, he said, you've got a spot in 2 weeks' time. And I thought, what the hell am I going to talk about? Like, you know, in my classes, I know what I'm going to talk about, obviously. But, you know, in front of people in Shoreditch, what the hell are you going to do? You can't bring up childbirth, you know, to this
hipster. Oh, you literally can.
Yeah. Now I know.
We've done that in Shoreditch. We once talked about prolapses and pelvic floors in Shoreditch.
Yeah.
And there was just young hipsters being sick in the corner.
Yeah, it was like a hipster cafe and it was very brightly lit and there was about 8 young men.
They're all on their Apple laptops.
On their apples. Just looking at us like, what the fuck is wrong?
What are you saying? What's wrong with you?
See, that's where it went wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wrote this set and it was my husband said, you got a reaction.
Is that from the person with Tourette's?
Most likely. It's always the people going,
What was it about? What were your first jokes about?
Dirty underpants. Right. I don't know why.
Dirty underpants, I mean...
I don't know why. Like, of all the things, like, I would never even think of writing about that. But I just sat down and I thought, I wonder what humour would be.
Yeah.
Humour, what's that about? I know.
So it was awful. And then the promoter said to me, why don't you talk about what you know? He said, you weren't very
You're like, but my underpants are dirty. What are you talking about?
I know right now.
That's all I know. Yeah. And I was like, oh God, yeah. And he said, talk about things that you're passionate about. And I thought, actually, that's easy. Talk about things you're passionate about. And So then I wrote my first set and I thought, oh yeah, I'm more comfortable talking about this. And that is how I started talking about colonialism.
Oh.
Hey, hey!
Yeah. Putting the lol in
fun,
colonialism.
Fun.
Amazing scenes. Yeah.
That's great because, I mean, like when we all started out, because you started out at a similar time to us. It was, and still is, a lot of blokes talking about their cocks.
This is it.
Yeah.
And why not talk about colonialism? Because, you know.
Yes, yeah, bring them down a notch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's many discussions of different shapes, sizes of different cocks. So,
online dating, what's that about?
Thing. I know. Ooh, isn't it funny? Yeah.
How do you find the audiences, like, over the years, react? Kind of when it becomes obvious you are going to talk about colonialism, does it kind of make people go, do you know what I mean?
Sometimes. Yeah. Well, the thing is, if people hadn't supported me, I wouldn't do it. because I would have known by now a long time ago that people don't want to hear it. There are some people who feel uncomfortable and they say, yeah, of course it's uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean we don't want to hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's just that we feel bad. You see, like, you started apologizing to me. So sometimes
people... I have a lot of guilt and I'd like to unburden myself of that guilt onto you. That's...
But it wasn't you. You know, right. let me say, Mr. McGrath is very white himself.
Right.
And he apologised for the first few weeks we were together. And he said, listen, I am not apologising anymore, okay?
For anything. Like,
fair enough. Do the dishes then. And, so here I am. So you're a better person than me.
I'd be milking it, man. I'd be like, yeah, can you take the bins out, please? Oh, I'm too tired. Rhodesia! That's what I'd be doing.
Let's move up north from Rhodesia.
Yeah, yeah.
The dishes. It's like, oh God.
Yeah,
poor man. Poor man.
Yeah. So your last show, Accidental Coconut, what was that was about colonialism and...
I think that there's a lot of amnesia about the impact of colonialism.
Mm.
People don't want to admit it. Even like when you see how like all these people are being deported back to Jamaica and all of this stuff. It's awful. But people refuse to accept that the British had a big role around the world and completely, you know, messed up loads of places around the world. And those people from around the world are not supposed to feel anything or manifest anything. We're supposed to just be coming and stealing people's jobs. And it's not... is not that. So when the British came, so my tribe, I'm from a tribe called the Gikuyu. You will see it written as the Kikuyu, which because the British could never say Gikuyu, so they called it the Kikuyu. So my tribe were the Gikuyu. We were farmers in the central province of Kenya, and literally the British came and said, we want that land. And everybody was like, okay, out, get out, shoot. The British want your land, go. So where did they go? A native reserve. They were put in a native reserve with no food, no money, nothing. So then they brought in the Red Cross to feed the hungry. Like, what the actual fuck is this?
Mm.
So, and then, you know, like, I in my new show Accident, Black.
So this is the show you're writing at the moment, Black.
Yes, yeah. So that's Edinburgh 2020. And this is just because, like, we were all supposed to take our children to boarding school. I suppose you see this, like, even in Canada, the natives been sending their kids to boarding school to take the ethnicity out of them. And so we're brainwashed to think English, be English. And this is kind of a little bit like Accidental Coconut as well. So then you come out at the end of it and they say, you're a coconut, aren't you? It's like, no, I mean, that's kind of, I was just taken to a British school. I learned about white men in tights and how white men are amazing. They conquered around the world and, you know, achieved everything and whatever. That's what we were taught. Mm. Then what am I supposed to think? Then I'm supposed to think native, you know, what am I? So there is that. But my current show, Black, is basically a comparison between my life now in a political backdrop, you know, with the rise of narcissism, socialism, Marxism, hideous racism. And when my grandmother was, living in Kenya in the 1930s, 1940s, Stalin was in charge, Hitler, Mussolini was in charge, Churchill, and all of those people. But, I'm living under progressive times, under Trump, Bolsonaro,
yeah,
and
great.
Johnson.
Yeah. We've come so far, guys.
this is what I'm my show is about, a comparison between my grandma's life era and this era. Surprise, is not that different.
Yeah,
it's disturbingly similar. So I'm looking at the political setup between that era of my grandmother living in Kenya, ruled by the British, and me here living in Britain, ruled by the British, and how they lived in fear, you know, as a as a black woman, African woman living in the UK, living in fear, because we're now living in fear. You just don't know when, you know, you're going to be attacked. You know, the climate has really changed. We are feeling the fear. You just don't know. Even like when I go to do gigs, I sometimes get fearful because you don't actually know what of that stuff online is going to transfer to real life. You just don't know. But it's a frightening time.
So how do you talk to your kids about that then? Because your children are teenagers, right?
Yeah.
They're, Is it 18 and 19?
Yes.
And they're both girls?
Yeah, two girls.
So do you, how much do you talk to them about, you know, not only your own history, but what's going on now and how to cope with that, I guess?
I mean, I can't help but tell them.
Mm-hmm.
For example, last week I had a situation with my daughter. She walked out of the class and she walked out of the school. And the school rang me. She said she has walked out of the class and she has left the school. And I asked her, what is wrong? She said, I was supposed to go to this lecture. And this lecture was being given. And literally, she sent me the email and about the lecture. It said, this is what the email said. It said, we're going to be raising money for African women because African women tend to be poor, unhygienic, don't wear underwear, they're more likely to get raped, and all of this. And she walked out. She banged the door, she walked out, and she walked home. And as she showed me the email, I was furious. And she said, please, if you know any relatives who have old bras to give these women, please ask them to give these women their old bras. And, you know, and I was, I I don't want to cause trouble for my daughter. And I don't want, I just want to live in peace. I don't want to cause any trouble for anybody. But in the end, I had to write and say, now, when you are indoctrinating the girls in your school with this type of information, how do you think they're going to treat African girls who are at the school? If any, or God forbid, any of the African girls there get raped, who is going to be blamed? They for being unhygienic. And I say to them, first of all, please do not disseminate ignorant information. African women, many, many, many African tribes are matrilineal, which is why they never wore bras. They walked around topless because they believed actually they were superior. That's why. And to this day, African women have real trouble wearing bras. And you do get a lot of like white saviors going to take them bras and get them to wear bras. And this is the thing. And I say to them, from when the white people arrived in Africa, they made their conclusions about Africans. They called them uncouth, dirty, unhygienic, and whatever. And this is what I said to this teacher. And I said, this is exactly the same stuff that you're writing. 200 years later, you're writing the same stuff. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry. Please, you know, come and give a lecture at the school and teach us what we're doing wrong. It's like, first of all, rapists are to blame, not the women. Mm. I said, women here get raped. Women in America get raped. Women in all countries get raped. Those women are not to blame. The blame goes to the rapists. And also, I don't know if you know anything about rapists. They don't go around smelling people and thinking, this one is quite unhygienic, so let's... They don't think like that. And so I was quite livid. So then I had to sit down and discuss this with my daughter. And I just said, yeah, it's preposterous. So I wrote the email and I said, I can't have this. And she said, see, this is why I walked out of school. And I was like, yeah, this is the kind of girl I have raised, that she's not going to sit down and listen to that stuff being disseminated. And I said, actually, what you're doing, you might not know what you're doing, but what you're doing is actually teaching racism to these children. You think you're doing good, but it's not good you're doing. Because next time they see an African woman, they're going to think, oh, stay away, they're unhygienic. They don't wear underwear.
It is mind-blowing in 2020 that that this information is being...
It's crazy.
And in an educational setting where you've trusted...
Yes.
That these will educate your children, yes. And that you, your daughter did the right thing, and obviously that she has, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is that I began to notice that my children are mixed race, and mixed race children have different issues that you and I wouldn't have, because I know who I am. I'm all African. I grew up in Africa, so I saw African people and all of that stuff. But they are half English, half African. And mixed-race children can have a different set of issues. So when my 19-year-old, when she was doing something called EPQ, it's something they do in a senior school, which is like a project, like a dissertation-type project. So she decided, she came and told me, do you know what I'm doing for my dissertation? I'm doing something called, it's called Am I White or Am I Black? And I was like, whoa, that's deep.
Yeah.
That's deep. And she said, yeah. And so you know, I was, you know, talking to her about it. And, you know, she was saying, yeah, I have felt different, because she says, you are different. You know who I am, who you are. Daddy knows who he is. And I wish I had spoken to them in my language, but then I did not want to disadvantage them, you see, because when they go to...
Really? So, yeah, you didn't teach them, yeah.
I regret it now.
Do you?
Yeah, because I thought, God, you know, they're living here, and, you know, the first question the school asked me when I went to, I approached them for a place for my daughters, was like, what language do they think in? And so you're always worried, always nervous about this sort of thing. And so I didn't, but what I did
So you thought it would be a disadvantage if they did have that as a language?
Yeah, because
looked down on, or?
I thought so, because, you know, if you look at when they talk about failing schools, they will refer to that school as 30% of the children don't have English as their first language. And I was always aware that, you know, I didn't want my children to be, again, have another disadvantage. These things are very subtle, but they put you in your place.
Mm.
And so I did it. And but what I did do was I started taking my children to Africa. So for the last few years, every year we've gone to Africa. So and at first my children didn't want to use their Ikuyu names. They were embarrassed about using their Ikuyu names. They didn't want to write them down. And when we went to Kenya the first time, and they were running around playing with girls with similar names and boys with all these, you know, like names that they'd had before, but they never really. And then when we came back for like the first time, they were writing their Kikuyu names, like, you know, on paper, on their textbooks and stuff. Mm. So I thought at least it gave them a sense of belonging. And since then, we've gone pretty much every year. And that has really, I think, helped them identify with who they are. They want, my girls have very curly hair and they wanted straight hair, so they spend ages like straightening it, trying to make it straighter and straighter. They get so frustrated if it was damp because it kind of got, you know, they had so many issues with their hair. We went to Africa and they said all the girls had plaited hair, all the girls, and they were like, we want to be like them. So so it really massively helped them. So sometimes they braid their hair.
Mm.
Sometimes they have it curly. Sometimes they have it. So they just see it as, you know, we have options.
Yeah.
Rather than all our hairs must be like whoever, you know, with straight hair and stuff. So I didn't realize that the mixed race children would have those issues, because I thought, well, they're growing up here. So what issues would they have? Yeah.
Mm. So I know. So you said you would... You kind of regret not teaching them the language.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about people listening to this podcast. Mm. Is there any other sort of nuggets of wisdom, we call them, usually?
Yes,
any
yes,
other
that's
nuggets
right. Yeah.
You want to maybe pass on to someone who maybe is raising a mixed race child that you kind of wish you'd known?
Yeah, well, first of all, so long as you're there for them emotionally, it is really important. But it's good for them to know who they are. Even if, so sometimes, like, I know if, say, like, relationships have so gone, sort of people have parted their ways, and sometimes, so I know mixed race children of parents like that, sometimes they either grew up with a black mom or they grew up with a white mom. It's nice to just, like, expose them to both cultures.
Mm.
So just try and expose them to both cultures so that it helps them understand the environments from which both their parents come from. And I know it can be very hard because sometimes people live so far away from anything that is, you know, culturally appropriate and stuff like that. But I was fortunate because my mother still lived in Kenya, so I was able to take them to Kenya. And also maybe look out for books. We're trying to, the black British writers are trying to say, and I want to write books for children as well, so that children can actually see themselves in stories and see themselves in books, because this is it. If you don't look a certain way, sometimes those people are not represented.
Mm.
And this causes an identity crisis, and there's a big identity crisis. But people who have got very young children, very young babies, I would just say cuddle them and just love them, because they love you then. When they become teenagers.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, can we go down that path then?
Yeah.
Because one of the biggest questions we get asked from our listeners and indeed our followers on Instagram is like, oh my God, what do you do with a teenager? Because I think, you know, it does feel overwhelming when you have little children. I know there's listeners who've got toddlers and thinking, Jesus, this is really hard.
Yeah.
But they still can be bribed with biscuits and iPads.
Yeah.
But you're at the other end of teenagehood.
Yeah.
And girls. And girls are a bit scary.
Oh. Well, the thing is that it's really interesting because they're tall. Like my girls are taller than me, mm-hmm. and it's a bit of everything. You get a bit of everything because they speak to me, and sometimes it feels like I am speaking to really intelligent young women. They don't drink. Because teenagers these days are not, you know, they don't drink.
Oh, I know, tedious. Come on, lads.
I've heard this because, and social media is being a huge influence that people don't want to drink because people can record them at any stage of sobriety.
Yeah.
And then that image is like projected across the world.
But it's not even that, they just say it's not cool. They
what?
Just, it's not cool.
What are you talking about? It's like, mate, guzzle my sob in your blog.
To be fair, Helen, it's not cool. Like, we're not cool. And we drink quite a lot. We're not cool.
I will not hear of it, Ellie.
So the thing is, like, they see my husband and I drinking. They're like, do you want to be like them?
See, we're doing our children... Listen, listener, we're doing ourselves... and our children a service by drinking wine in front of them. Oh my God, we live to give.
I know. This is it.
Saving lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Seriously, and they're vegan. So I'm like, my oldest daughter, she's vegan.
Great.
And so they are. I mean,
so they're informed. Like, you feel like they're
totally.
Much more.
Oh my God, they're so
too informed. One would say.
I know, and sometimes like just relax, you know, just
chill out.
Leave me and Daddy. We are very simple. We just want to have a drink, okay? Please, like, just leave
the
us alone.
Are very simple people, simple folk.
Oh, honey, I can have an apple just for care.
Yeah, no, in the mill, in a simple village in Ealing.
Takes a village in Ealing to raise a child. Funny!
So I tell you what. So there is that. So there. Highly intelligent, emotionally intelligent, so they know what's going on around the world and stuff like that. And sometimes I think, gosh, you know, you guys are, you know, you do me proud. And then within the same breath, they will smash the door. I was like, don't talk to me. It's like, what happened?
Yeah. Like, we were just talking about Brexit.
Yeah.
You're not even fucking drunk. Why are you slamming the door?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's me that's supposed to be slamming the door.
Yeah.
I've had 4 bottles of wine.
Oh my God. And the thing is, they're big and they're powerful. When a toddler is having a tantrum, you can lift them and put them on the notice stove.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're more likely to lift me and put me on the notice stove. So if it feels, I tell you what, they push buttons than any other time in life they will push.
Okay.
Yeah. And but then at the end of the day, you have to remember it's short-lived. Just like, you know, when there were babies, they were teething, that's very short-lived. When there were toddlers and it was hard, that's short-lived. It's always important to remember that is a short-lived thing. Their brains are still developing, despite the fact that they're very tall and big and stuff like that. Their brains are still developing. Their hormones are going crazy.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
Aren't they?
They're dealing with so much more. They're you know, perhaps thinking about boys, you know, and everybody's talking about boys and all of this stuff, and there's so much pressure, and then boys have a different idea about what sex should be like because you know they're watching porn and stuff like that, so they're feeling a lot of pressure, and you can see why they need to sort of let it out. So when I was talking to one of my daughter's teachers, and she said, yeah, she can get angry. I was like, well, actually, I'd rather it comes out rather than she holds on to it. Because, you know, I've seen some of their friends with, you know, there's a lot of mental health issues at schools and stuff like that. And like, well, okay, fine. So what I can say to you, if you're worried about door slamming and stuff, just invest in good paint.
Very good paint.
Yeah. Like, does it have to be Farrow and Ball, or can you just get like,
Dulux white.
There is a Farrow and Ball colour called Teenage Rage. Very angry red.
So. Oh, yeah. I was saying this to Jambi before the podcast was saying, you know, you get the baby safety kits, right?
Yeah. Right.
With the rubber.
Corners. Yeah.
We just need that, like a teenage safety kit.
Yeah.
You know, like the door slamming, just have a soft edge, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I don't even...
A lock on the fridge because they eat all the food.
Oh, please. Seriously, it's like, I will cook because we've always eaten early, so I tend to cook around between 5 and 6. So because, like, you know, if I'm going out, then I want to eat before I go out and stuff, so we've always eaten our dinner around 6 o'clock, and I come back And I met with, nobody ever cooks in this house. There's no food. I am so hungry. There's no food. Like, there's bananas. There's bread. There's hummus. There's olives. There's, and they're like, no, that's not food. It's like, what is your definition of food? Crisps? Chocolates?
Oh, right, yeah.
These people. Oh, I don't know how you stand it.
I know.
Turf them out, I say.
It's like my friend who's got a teenage daughter the other day opened the door to a Deliveroo man at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Who was delivering her daughter a McFlurry.
Yes. That's a thing. That is a thing.
What?
That is a thing. So, like, my husband, because he gets a text message to say, your McDonald's is nearby. It's like, what? What?
Oh, and
says,
man.
She, you know what she's ordered? Yeah, she's ordered, like, something like the chicken nuggets and something from Deliveroo.
Yeah.
It's like, what the actual hell? And
this is the end of days. This is
it is the end of days. And then she'll order something from literally a 4-minute walk to the shops, and she will order this from a Deliveroo. It's like, why can't you just walk there? And but you know what, my husband and I are like, anything for a peaceful, you know, it's
oh, well, I don't have to get up, I don't have to leave my wine.
No wonder you two are drinking so much. That's difficult.
Feed yourself. Get the
app.
We are doing a good service to the wine industry.
I love that though. Just get paint. That's your teenage.
Get paint.
Jammy's guide to teen parenting tips. Just get some fucking paint.
Get paint and some alcohol. You'll be fine.
Genius.
Amazing scenes.
Yes. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's
now,
crazy. Yeah.
Shall we do some book chat? Taylor?
I was just thinking that because do you know what? Mm. Jambi's written an amazing book.
I know, mate. Oh my god!
And it's called Through the Leopard's Gaze.
Yes, it is called Through the Leopard's Gaze.
What's it about, mate?
Me. Excellent. It's all about me.
I love you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Tell us more about you.
Yeah. So, basically, this is. This is a book. It's actually quite a powerful book. It's about the breakup of my family, my family when I was a child.
Mm.
And this breakup was because of a sequence of events that took place. And so I wanted to write it for a long, long time. So when I was 15, I sat down and I wrote a few pages and then I got distracted by something. So maybe clapping.
Your McFlurry arrived.
Yeah. I had door slamming to do, and then that kind of disappeared from my mind. And then I read a book by an author called Jung Chung. She wrote a book called World Swans.
Oh yeah, I've read that. Yeah, yes. Great book.
A fantastic book. And I thought, I'm going to write a book like this. And because at the back of my mind there was
about growing up in China. I don't know if that's your.
Like, I feel like it's been done.
That's your specialist subject, Jambi.
From an African perspective.
That has not been done. I'm willing to bet.
That's a first.
There you go. So because I thought, you know, but I don't know why, but I got that thought after I read it, because I love the book, because I knew very little about China. But it was nice to have the human story and to have the background story. But, you know, that was just a thought, and then it disappeared for a long time. And then in 2014, my father died. And my father and I, we had a terrible relationship, because the last time I saw him was when I was 13. And when I was 13 years old, my father was full of rage. He came home one night. He said I'd done something and was like, I don't know what you're on about. I didn't do anything. And then he laid into me. And last thing I remember is an object hitting me on my head, and I blacked out. Oh. And then I woke up it was pitch black in the middle of the night, because my dad was quite violent and my mother had run away, and, you know, he chased her with an axe, and, you know, he could have killed and stuff. So my instinct as a 13-year-old girl was get up and go. He's coming back. Yeah. So I literally just got up and I walked out. I was walking in the coffee plantations.
So this is in Kenya?
In Kenya. We grew up, Kenya, on a farm. So I was growing up on a farm in Kenya. And so I walked for ages and ages in my pink nightdress, carrying I took my suitcase with me. And I just walked for ages. And then I noticed a car, headlights, and the car stopped behind me. And I kept my head down because I didn't want them to recognize me, because I thought if they recognized me, they would take me straight back to my dad's house. And I didn't want to be there, so I kept my head down. And so they just ordered me to get into the car. And I just got into the car, and off we drove off. But those men they could have done anything to me, but they didn't. So they kind of did. They were good Samaritans, basically. Okay. So that was the last time I saw my father.
So where did they take you then? Yeah. Did you know they were good Samaritans when you?
No, I didn't.
That must have been terrifying.
I wasn't even terrified. I think, and this is what I say is when you're a child, you don't rationalize in the same way you rationalize now. Mm. The fear that I feel for my 13-year-old me is only now. When I was writing the book, I was like, whoa. Mm.
Like, what did you do? Why did you get that girl?
Some of the things I did in my 20s get not the same, but going around Southeast Asia, I'm like, my God.
Yeah. Never do that. Yes.
This is it. And so I was like, how did I get into that? But I did get into that car, and he just said, and I was they put me between them, so I was sat between him and the driver. And I just sat there, and they could see I was badly injured because, you know, I was bleeding. Mm. I was in a nightdress. It was covered in blood. Mm. So they asked me, where are you going? And I told them, I'm going to boarding school. They knew, obviously, I wasn't going to boarding school. But, you know, but at the time, I thought that was a convincing lie. Of course, it wasn't a convincing lie.
Yeah.
And they asked me, where is your boarding school? And I just told them this town near where my mother lived. And that's where they dropped me.
So they took you to the town?
Yeah.
And then did you find your mum or how?
Yeah. So I describe all of this in the book. I kind of roughly knew where my mother lived because she was working in this hospital. So I went and I sat at the steps of her house, and I was fearful of her sending me back. And so it's when I was sat on the steps crying that I heard her voice, because she was doing night shift, so she was coming in the morning. So in the morning she saw me there. It's 6 o'clock in the morning when she saw me there in a pink nightdress covered in blood. So you can just imagine.
Oh my gosh.
It was incredible. It was awful. And so, cut a long story short, we move on, and I come to London and I meet Dave, and we are happy, we have children. But those memories, I just push them down and down and down, because I felt actually ashamed. It's weird, the things you feel ashamed about. I was ashamed about what happened to my family. I was ashamed about being a victim. And so I never wanted to go there. And even my siblings never want to go there. They get very uncomfortable. It's like, you don't talk about stuff like that. And so when my brother decides to get married, he invites our dad. And now that brings the whole thing back for me. And I'm beginning to lose the plot. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to be? So I'm sort of hyperventilating, thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to go to the wedding. I will go to the wedding. What am I going to do? And then I think, I'm gonna talk to him. And we don't get a chance to talk to him. And by this point, I am now, everything has come up. It's now just so there, really, yeah, for me to face. And then I say, so I plan the meeting. The meeting goes horribly wrong because he brings his entire family.
Your dad.
Yeah. And does he have a new wife? And new children.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so by that point, I'm now completely and utterly livid. And then the wedding happens, and it's fine. And then I say to him, I need to meet up. I need to talk to you. And he says, fine. So it's fine, we're going to meet up. And I get a call, he's died. And that's a kind of like, I went on a spiral. I was like, whoa. Yeah, all of the sort of the castles I built while on sand, where they were crumbling, and it's like, oh my God, this is incredible. But it sounds like a very heavy book. It's quite an emotional book, but it's about survival. Very luckily, some people have read it, and they've said, so David Lammy said he really, MP, he said that he absolutely loved the book because it's about tragedy and survival.
Yeah.
And so if people are thinking, oh my God, it's too heavy for me, it's a human story, and you will hear things that will surprise you, things that, you know, you might think, oh gosh, I can't believe that. And some things that will... So people have... I tell you what, some people have messaged me to say they read it, and everybody's reading it in a day, so no pressure.
Right, yeah.
Unputdownable.
Not
that's your it. Words, other people's
that,
words.
That's
other David Lammy, MP.
I was going past Tottenham Court Road, and I saw a shelf of my book.
Amazing.
I know. I was like,
we've been to that Foyles and bought our own book there.
Yeah. I bought our own book in Bluewater Waterstones.
No more copies are available. We bought the two copies.
So have your kids read the book?
So they say to me, they wouldn't. Well, my copy arrived late last week.
Right.
And they said they want signed copies. I only got them last week because I know.
Fucking precious.
I know.
Sign the fucking thing, mummy.
Are you nervous about them reading it, or are you alright with it? Do they know all the stuff that's in it anyway?
The stories.
You know, when I was writing it, sometimes I would read it aloud so they could hear some of the things. I think they don't know the full details of everything.
Yeah.
But they know the fragments of it. You know, they know the story because, like, they were at the wedding and all of that stuff. And Dave has downloaded it on Audible.
This is your husband.
My husband.
Not the popular comedy channel.
No. We're not that familiar.
So your book is called Through the Leopard's Gaze.
Yes.
And it's out now.
It's out now. It's everywhere.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Cheers,
man. I'm well chuffed. And if anybody wants to see what I do, I've got 3 comedy specials on Next Up. So people can go and binge on
Jambi.
Jambi, yeah. So read
Jambi
the book.
Jambi binge, yeah.
Read the book. And if you haven't had enough of me, just go to Next Up. You can watch my last year's show. It's called Accidental Coconut. Then you can watch the year before that. What was that? African in New York. And then before that, it was Breaking Black.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, it's all going on.
Oh my Jambi God. World. She's actually organised with their comedy stuff. It's really good.
Anyway. Yeah, but well done. You guys are doing amazing. You know,
we're all right,
podcasts, you know.
We're not tackling colonialism. We just tell some tit jokes. Yeah. Really, it's not that big a deal.
It's important. Wow. It is important.
We'll see. History will be our judge.
it already is.
But people will look back and say they lived well. You know,
yeah. I tell you what, we don't have any slavery themed wallpapers, so we've got that going for us.
Progress.
Tick that box in.
By the way, don't go in the downstairs toilet, it's broken. Anyway, I'm joking, I don't have to anymore. But, so anyway, now we do like to end the podcast, Jambi, with a scummy mummy confession. I'm going to start this time. Yeah. So I took my son Charlie away for a little bit of mum and son time at the weekend.
Mother James would be pleased.
Yeah. Nice. So we went to Brighton. It was all very jolly. And he's eight, my son Charlie. So it was, yeah,
he's
really
gorgeous.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good times.
Yeah.
So, and we got to the hotel a little bit early, so we were just waiting for our room to be ready. So we thought we'd have a lovely drink in the nice seafront bar, very nice.
Yeah.
And we were sitting there having a drink, and I looked over, and there was a sort of bloke a bit older than me and his mum, who was really quite old, and he was helping her and calling her mum and stuff. And they sat down, and I think his wife or his partner was there as well, and they were like having a lemonade, and it was just a nice little
so
scene.
Blessed, yeah.
And I said to Charlie, like, oh look, you know, I hope you know you could take me out for a drink one day. That would be nice, you know, take me out for lemonade. And we chatted about it, and then anyways, we were going to go to our room, we walked past them and they sort of gave us a smile, and I said, oh, and I said to the older lady, oh, it's nice to see you out of your son, I've just been telling my son, blah blah blah. And then her son said, oh yes, this is my mum, she's 99. And I said, oh wow, that's amazing.
That's incredible.
And then I thought of my own grandma, and I just sort of, you know, said, oh yeah, my grandma's 100. And then Charlie said, yeah, but she's not now, is she? Because she died.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh. Because immediately I'm like, why did he say that? But also I'm like, why did I say that? Because she is dead, and who cares if my grandma's 100?
Yeah, but I win.
Yeah, and now we basically tell this woman she's got 12 months to live, and oh my God. And then I said, really unhelpfully, I was like, yes, darling, but we don't talk about that, do we? So then it's even more weird. Oh, yeah. So now we've got this dead grandma that we never talk about. For what reason? For what sinister reason?
Yeah, lovely to meet you.
And
yeah, you're not going to die, don't worry.
Yes.
Yeah, but you might, but that's okay. But anyway, lovely, bye.
And thankfully,
so British.
I don't think the older lady heard, and the man was very sweet about it. And he was like, no, that's all right. Like, that's life. Yeah. And I was like, or death. So it was, it was one of the most English things I think that's ever happened. So that was good. That was good times. Who wants to go next?
Have you got a scummy mummy confession, Jambi?
I do. I was, we went to one of the Greek islands. I think it was Halikidiki when my daughter was about 18 months or so. Mm-hmm. So we only had one at the time.
Enough.
Oh, yeah. The good old days.
18 months is like having 18 children.
Yeah, I know. So we were coming back, and Greece was really hot. So we're coming back, I just had like shorts and t-shirts and a white t-shirt, and everything else was in the suitcase because we were like really hot. And then she did a poo, as they do. And I said to my husband, oh, let me go and change her. So I went to the plane toilet. And she was freaking out. She was claustrophobic. She, every time I laid her back, she was like screaming. I was like, oh God, I can't do it in here. She's freaking out. So I thought, oh, fine, I'll take her back. And then probably I'll just do it on the seat or whatever. So took her back. And by this point, I had taken off her trousers and then I carried her back. Lo and behold, it had leaked all over my t-shirt, all over me.
Oh, Jambi.
All over me. And by the time I got to Dave, it had leaked everywhere.
Oh.
And we were like, oh my God.
So gross.
It's disgusting. And I didn't even have a jacket or anything else I could take off my t-shirt.
No, because you're in like minimum clothes.
Yeah. And I was, and then just going through the airport with me covered in shit and, you know, with my attaché case, and there's nothing to see here.
Styling it out.
Look away. This is it's organic. It's organic.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was, I've never forgotten that. And sometimes I think I should do the same to you.
Your time will come, Jenny.
Yeah. Oh,
very nice.
What a lovely story.
Yeah.
Helen, have you anything to share this week?
Yeah. I just want to say, because people coming to our new show, we talk about the joys of accidentally having a wee in the pool as a mother. Just a little, you know, little treat.
Accidentally.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we call it these days.
Yeah, anyway, so I thought I could get away with it, right? But what I had forgotten was, and you know, top fans of the podcast will know that I like a Barocca in the morning.
Ooh.
And I did this wee in Forest Hill Pools. And it was so bright.
Oh, my God, this is a real thing, because you've been saying this on stage. I thought it was a joke, because nobody would actually do that. So, oh, my God, I thought you'd make this up for a joke. This actually happened.
No, it was like live imitating art. Seriously, it was like, it was like Chernobyl. It was fluorescent. I was so embarrassed.
Oh, my God.
It was like, you can imagine like a cartoon, like, I got a suntan from the rays of the Barocca wee.
Oh, God.
So embarrassing.
Oh. What did you, were you like, oh, no, my fake tan's glitching? Oh my god!
I was like standing in a yellow cloud. It was so bad. I was like, why did I think that was a good idea? Why in that moment going, I know, I'm really with it. I'm like, what the fuck?
Sometimes I'm right. You should have said, oh, look, it's magic.
Could it be magic now?
How are you still alive? We've made it to 41. I don't understand.
I know. I was thinking about this today, and I thought I nearly did a game on the podcast tonight about the reason I have gone to the doctor. Because there are just times where, like, I've been to the doctor once because my farts are really smelly. And, like, she was like, really?
Really?
You know, she's like, are you eating too many lentils? I was like, maybe. I was like, but is there something? I said, is there something wrong with me? Because my farts smell really bad. And she's like, yeah. Oh, she's like, just go. Please just go. And then, another time I did a poo that was in the shape of a tennis ball. And I went there and I said,
you went to the doctor because you did a funny shaped poo. Please don't tell me you took the poo to the doctor.
No, I was like, but it was like perfectly spherical. And I said, oh, is that something bad? And he's like, do you want me to have a look at your ass, like at your bum? And I was like, yes, please. He's like, really? I was like, yeah, could you just have a look? And he's like, can you pull up a glass?
Oh, my God.
And he's like, oh, your asshole's shaped like a mess.
Stop going to the doctor.
That's something.
I mean,
yeah.
Anyway, I feel like we've covered a lot of topics.
Do you know what you should drink? You should drink kefir milk.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I had some of that the other day.
Yeah. Is that good for you?
It's very good, because it sounds like, now there's, you can come to me. Don't go to the doctor again.
Oh, yeah. I would prefer it, because
the doctor would prefer it.
Because
me.
I tell you what,
I'm sorry, NHS, yogurt. I've wasted your resources.
You're the reason the NHS is collapsing. Imagine if everybody went to the doctor every time they did
patient zero.
Every time someone did a smelly fart, they went to the fucking doctor.
So the doctor, me again. You can smell it. So do you know?
A sample jar.
Yeah.
Oh God.
But do you know what it is?
Yeah.
It, sometimes in life you have an imbalance between good bacteria and bad bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you've had an imbalance of sort of both, so you have more bad bacteria,
mm-hmm.
they create more smelly.
Yes.
So if you drink kefir milk and you drink something like kombucha, mm-hmm. you feed the good bacteria, so they grow and they multiply and they overpower the bad bacteria.
Amazing.
So the good ones don't smell as bad.
The good ones overpower the bad bacteria. The bad bacteria, they cause a lot of wind, basically.
Right.
Think of it like this. If you've got a farm and you've got animals and you feed them well, they will do the job.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing with your bacteria. So think you've got a farm in your gut. So
I feel like sometimes there's a farm in my gut.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Wowzers. It smells like there is.
Yeah. It's shared many a room and a van.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Poor Ellie.
What should you do if you're on your farm and your cows are shitting tennis balls? What do you do then? Just eat more yogurt.
Sorry, doctors. I'm really sorry.
Well, thank you, Jamie. You've just saved the NHS £10,000 a year.
Put that on the side of the fucking bus.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go to doctors and my eyebrows need plucking. Is there something wrong with me? My toenails keep growing. Help me, doctor. Help me.
I think a lot of mums and dads will appreciate this one. Did your kids ever get knits?
Knits? Oh, God, yeah. Last week, mate. Yeah, yeah. Oh, all the time. Don't worry. We've all disinfected ourselves. Okay. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, I was so unfamiliar with knits, and Now, like, we were talking about racism and stuff like that. I didn't know white people got needs.
You are so racist.
Oh, my God.
Get out of my house. I'm offended. I'm offended.
I know, right? But I found out when my children came home and my daughter was like, oh, mommy, my head itches, my head itches. And I was like, I parted her hair. I was like, you've got things flying in your hair. And she said, yeah, I've got needs. I was like, how do you know? This is because everybody in the class has them. It's like, oh, my God. And we used to share brushes and everything.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, like when I'm teaching, I've been really scratching.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, my God. So I started looking, oh, well, what do you do with knits and stuff like that? So yeah. You get a knit comb. So yeah. I got a knit comb. Except my hair is afro. I mean, this is not my real hair, you can see. But my hair is afro.
Yeah.
That knit comb will not go through that.
Right. Okay.
Fucking racist combs. I've had enough.
They are designed for white people, seriously. I was like, oh my God. So I got rid of all the knits on my children's hair. But my own hair, I still had knits. The only thing that could shave me was a...
I had buzz cut.
Yeah, I the reason I told you this is because I went to the GP. I went to my doctor.
All right, yeah, I've got knits.
Yeah, I've
you fucking people! You're everything that's wrong with this country.
It's bullshits and knits.
It's me and you. I knew you. I was behind you.
Help me, doctor. I've forgotten how to wipe my ass. Can you do it for me? Yeah.
That's right.
And he was so good. He picked a few, and he was like, "Yeah, I can see them." He picked a few. And he was
absolute
so
gentleman.
Nice. No, but then I wanted him to give me a prescription of like acid strength stuff.
Yeah.
Because the needs.
Bleach.
Yeah. Because the needs in this country, I think they are resistant to the stuff you buy over the counter.
Mm.
They like drink it for fun. Yeah. So the only solution for me was to shave off my head. I took shears and just went zzz, zzz, zzz.
Wicked. I like it. I'm into it.
This is like
bold.
You had like your Sigourney Weaver moment in Alien 3.
Yeah.
Where she just went.
Yeah. I did that. My daughter saw me. She screamed. And like, I don't know what else to do. It was a few years back, so I've got hair now.
Mm. Yeah. Well, fuck head lice. Fuck white people. If it was established that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
And buy Jambi's book.
Buy my book.
Through the Leopard's Gaze, out now. Watch your comedy specials on Next Up.
Yes, my comedy specials on Next Up.
There we go. Our book, of course.
Still in print.
Whoa. Say, of course. Who knows how much longer. We're running the marathon, so...
Ooh,
yeah.
Aren't we just...
Nice.
I ran a cheeky half marathon today.
Oh, look at you. Oh, drop it there. Oh, I ran a half marathon today. Now, I'm from Kenya. I haven't even run a single marathon. You think I would have run
Fuck
a marathon
sake.
By now.
Come on.
They're your words, not mine.
If you want to be racist, mate,
that's completely fine.
But you really can't ask us to join in. There's history.
None of your racism.
She came here, racially abused herself, and then pissed off.
Outrageous. Banged on about knits, and then fucked off.
Comes over here.
Yes. Oh. Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And thank you, Jambi, for being an amazing guest.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun. Oh, my God. You guys are the best. I love you. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we love you too.
I love you more.
Oh, now it's a competition.
Excuse me, we'll have to stop the podcast. We're all having sex.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Oh, I can't press stop. You don't know where my fingers are right now. Anyway.
So slippery.
Not serious university. Oh, please God, let's end this. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Now it's Jambi, isn't it? Is it McGrath or McGrath?
You can call me whatever you want to call me, darling.
What do you prefer?
It's not my name, it's my husband's name, so
right.
I don't really care. You can call me McGrath or McGrath, it doesn't bother me, so long as you say Jambi right, that's all that matters to me.
I'm saying Jambi right though, aren't I?
Yes, you did.
That's the main thing.
Well, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
She's got
two children later.
Exactly. At least twice.
Yeah. Yeah. McGrath it is. That's what we're going with.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.